You're listening to the Marketplace Flash Briefing. I'm Kimberly Adams. We're following news out of Europe today. Russia announced its recognition of two separatist regions in Ukraine, and the U.S. and its allies have been swift to condemn the move. They are imposing a new set of economic consequences with the hope that Russian President Vladimir Putin will be deterred from a full invasion of Ukraine by the threat of sanctions on Russia as a whole. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is watching this develop from London. I spoke with him earlier today, before the White House announced new measures in response to Russia's latest escalation. And I asked Stephen what specifically U.S. and European leaders are talking about when they say economic sanctions.
Well, they're not talking very specifically at all. It makes sense to be rather vague, so the Russians can't take too much evasive action beforehand. But what Vice President Kamala Harris mentioned at the weekend was a technology export ban to deprive Russia of the kind of technology that could be used for military purposes. And she said, we will target financial institutions, that's banks principally, and key industries. The Brits have spoken specifically about denying Russian banks and other Russian companies access to the city's financial markets and going after the assets of Kremlin-linked oligarchs with property in the UK.
How are these sanctions any different than past sanctions?
Well, they go much further, and they certainly go much further than the sanctions imposed in 2014. Those were aimed specifically at companies and individuals directly involved in the annexation of Crimea. These sanctions, which Kamala Harris described as swift, severe, and unprecedented, would target potentially any company or individual linked to the Kremlin, any state-associated entity, any oligarch with close ties to Putin.
Who would be most affected by more sanctions?
Well, ordinary Russians would undoubtedly suffer. I mean, since those last set of sanctions in 2014, the Russian economy has grown by an average of 0.3% per year. Compare that with a global average of 2.3% per year. Probably the European country with most to lose would be Germany, because it is massively dependent on Russian natural gas. It derives around 50% of its natural gas from Russia. Italy gets a lot of it too. Overall, the EU takes about 40% of its natural gas from Russia. Now, it seems unlikely that for that reason, the sanctions would aim to shut down Russian energy exports altogether, but they certainly could be affected. The UK's financial centre in London's also a bit apprehensive about sanctions, about the notion of barring all Russian banks and other Russian companies from access to its markets, as this, in the view of some financiers, might damage London's image as a wide open market for foreign money.
What about here in the US? If there are more sanctions put on Russia, how might we experience that here?
Well, fairly narrowly at first, companies that have exported militarily useful technology to Russia would be hurt, clearly. But the biggest overall harm could be to the wider American economy. The biggest fear stalking financial markets at the moment is, of course, is inflation and the higher interest rates that it threatens to bring. Nothing could be more inflationary than a further upward spike in energy prices, which would surely follow if the flow of Russian oil and gas was severely disrupted, or if Putin, enraged by the sanctions, decided to turn off the tap.
Tense times indeed, and Marketplace's Stephen Beard keeping an eye on it for us. Thanks so much, Stephen.
Thank you, Kimberly.
It's a long weekend for many, and that means a lot of folks are traveling. Around 2 million people a day went through TSA airport checks this weekend, one of several signs travel is picking up again as the Omicron wave seems to be subsiding. Marketplace's Samantha Fields reports.
2 years into the pandemic, a pretty clear pattern has emerged. After every wave of infections comes a travel wave.
What we're seeing is that we're kind of on a 2 to 3 month timeline with when travel windows are really trending.
Adit Damodaran is an economist at the travel site Hopper. He says during the height of Delta, travel fell off. And then
coming off the Delta variant wave, you know, there was this huge resurgence in demand, only for the Omicron variant to sort of surface late November, early December, and then that same travel wave also subsided.
Now that the Omicron wave is subsiding, the demand for travel is surging again. There's evidence of that at Hopper and at all sorts of other companies, from Marriott and Disney to Uber and Lyft.
So far in 2022, travel demand expressed through Google search activity is up relative to where it was in December.
Craig Ewer at Google Flights says most of that travel is still happening domestically, which has been true throughout the pandemic. But
since January, there's been a pretty steady increase in demand for international travel.
Airbnb is seeing that too in its booking data.
We're really starting to see a return, not just to people being energized to travel, but also to start crossing borders again, to start going back to big cities again.
Christopher Nolte is a spokesperson for Airbnb. He says the company is also seeing something else return. People are booking trips further in advance.
In the heart of the pandemic, people were choosing to travel sort of last minute. We're now seeing people, you know, make the decision to travel a little bit further ahead of time, which in our mind is a signal of their confidence.
And he says it's also a signal that people are eager for something to look forward to. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
That's all for today's Flash Briefing. For more news, visit marketplace.org.